Hi, and welcome to Pod Sothoth, a Lovecraft book club. We'll be talking about the horrors of Lovecraft, so this podcast may not be for everyone. I'm Todd Beardsley.
I'm Claire Reynolds.
And today we're going to be talking about Pickman's Model. If you missed the reading or you want a refresher, it should be the episode just prior to this one. So let's get into it, shall we?
All right. Yes.
How are you, Claire? Let's
I'm
not
good,
get
Todd.
Into it. Let's talk to each other first. So we just got whooped in Elder Tor, which is a board game that we like.
Second night in a row.
I am drinking a increasingly horrible drink.
Like Lovecraft, I feel like you should have been warned about this ahead of time.
Well, it's a martini, except instead of an olive or an onion or something normal you'd find in a martini, I thought, hey, why not put an anchovy in it? Because I figured that would be a little more Lovecraftian. And I was right. This gets worse as time goes by.
Wait, why did you think it would be Lovecraftian? Because it would get worse?
Well, because it's a little bit fishy. And it just like, it is the mounting horror that I'm now experiencing as I get deeper and deeper into this martini as the fishy taste gets more and more pronounced.
This martini would be named From the Deep.
From the Deep. I love it. This is a deep one teeny. A deep teeny. How about a deep teeny?
All right, that's good.
Can we call it that?
I'm sipping on my delightful normal martini.
your human teeny.
Yes.
All right. Well,
you need a break so you can get yourself a new drink.
No. I am enjoying it and dreading it, much in the same way that I read Lovecraft. So, this is great. So let's talk about the story. So I read it aloud, as my foray into voice acting, in the last episode, which was last week. And I hear that you heard it.
I did. I listened to it twice and I read it once.
Okay. Excellent. You account for 20% of the downloads then of last week's podcast, which is not surprising. It's a new podcast.
We know my parents are one.
Yeah, your parents are one. I think our friend Domino might be one. But that is about it. So Pickman's Model was written in 1926. It wasn't published till 1927, but it was written in 1926. And in my opinion, it's pretty much peak Lovecraft. He wrote this after his divorce from Sonia Green, and after he had moved back to Providence. He had been living in New York for a little while, and he hated it. But this period of his writing is pretty much smack at the best point in my and many other opinions of Lovecraft's work. This was like contemporary with things like Call of Cthulhu, probably the thing that most people associate Lovecraft with. So if you wanted an entry into Lovecraft, you could do worse than Pickman's Model.
And when I have questions, or should I hold my questions to the end? Okay.
Absolutely not.
Okay, so here's my question. He had been living in New York, mm-hmm. and then went back to Providence after his divorce.
Correct.
Why was this story based in Boston? Well, my thought process is when you told me that he had just gotten a divorce and moved back from New York, I would think, mm-hmm. okay, so he obviously had just got out of a presumably, you know, unpleasant situation in
not
New York.
Great marriage. Yeah.
Right. Like why wouldn't, you know, maybe he would have had bad feelings about New York. So why did he base it in Boston? But he could have written it, you know, or had the idea floating around in his head for a long time before that.
That's true, especially with Lovecraft. Like Lovecraft is, you know, over the corpus of his work, like he will often come up with an idea and then put it in a drawer for 5 years and then come back to it. But I think Boston specifically is useful for the story because of all the subterranean elements. The story begins with him, with the character explaining why he doesn't ride the subway. And there's no subway in Providence, but there is a subway in Boston. And in fact, Bostonians famously argue with New Yorkers about who had the first real subway or who had the longest subway or who has, it's a crazy thing, right? Like, so I think that the story element of the subway necessitates that it be set in either Boston or New York. And like you say, like, he's probably not super hot in New York. So that's my answer and I'm sticking to it.
Okay.
It is weird. It is a weird dick measuring contest between Bostonians and New Yorkers about the subway, which I stumbled into totally by accident, by watching a couple friends, one New York, one Boston, like actually get into it.
It's like that and who's got the crazier baseball fans.
I guess, yes.
Everybody knows that is Pittsburgh.
Right.
They're the ones that they're the battery throwers, I believe.
That does not surprise me in the slightest. So here's the story. So the story is told by a character named Thurber, and he's talking to his friend named Elliot about the last night that he saw the titular Pikmin, and he's talking about this in the context of why he's afraid to ride the subway in Boston. He spends basically the whole story being a giant Pikmin fanboy, and he calls him one of the greatest artists of all time. It's like he is Team Pikmin all the way. So this was the last night that anyone had seen Pikmin, not just Thurber, the narrator. And at that time, Pikmin had lost basically all his friends, and Thurber is like the only one who pays any attention to him anymore. Everybody in the art scene were turning their back on Pikmin and calling him names and like not really giving him the time of day. Like his paintings, they wouldn't be shown anywhere. No one would buy them, you know? So like he was kind of a dead end, even though according to Thurber, this guy is baller. Like he is one of the greatest painters of all time. Pikmin, In the tale, Pikmin ends up taking Thurber to a secret studio that he's renting in the North End. And while Thurber is there, Thurber makes this shocking discovery that the subjects of Pikmin's paintings, these recurring ghouls that show up over and over again in Pikmin's paintings, are being drawn from life. Like he grabbed a photograph of it and he found it later in his pocket and he's like, oh my God, it's drawn from life. Dun, dun, dun. Right. And so that's like the big reveal at the end of the story, which is kind of given away in the title of the story, which is common in Lovecraft. So that's the TLDR of the story. If you want to hear the whole thing, go back an episode. You can hear me read it. And it's, I'm sure, delightful and scary. Did you like it? Did you like the reading? You're married to me, so you have to say you
liked
it.
No, of course I did. Well, I love your voice. And I'm going to be honest here. Mm-hmm. I like the Lovecraft adjacent games and stuff,
which is a huge part of Lovecraft, right? Yeah. Like that it, like, I don't want to denigrate that. I want this podcast to find friends in the Lovecraft gaming community. Go on.
No, I just don't. I don't know most of the stories. I'm going to hear you talk about them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I listen and sometimes I zone out. But you'll never know which one it is. It's very eerie and creepy. And it really made me think of when we did the Lovecraft tour in Providence.
Right.
Because it's a creepy, eerie place. Well, so here's one thing I want to speculate about. Like, okay, so Thurber feels the need. Like, why is he having this conversation with Elliot?
Well, for one, he's drunk. They're in a speakeasy, and they are drinking. The whole conversation was kicked off because presumably Elliot like was making fun of him for not wanting to ride the subway to wherever they were going.
Okay.
And he's going, oh yeah, well, I'll tell you a thing or two about the subway. It's got freaking monsters in it. And so I think that's why he's unloading the story. I don't think this happens like, and this is just headcanon for me. I don't think this is happening like 3 days after Pikmin's disappearance, or like, I think this might be like 3 years after, right? Like, I think this is like, this is the guy that you go to talk about Pikmin. And he tells a story all of the time.
Okay. I guess I was thinking that that they met specifically to talk about what happened to Pikmin.
Maybe.
I did really like the way that he's clearly inebriated in this, and he's just droning
and
on.
I do think he gets drunker and drunker as time goes on. Like, there's even a say, like, oh, we've had enough of that. Let's switch. We've had enough of the other stuff. Let's switch to coffee. So it's like 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And he's kind of scaring himself, I think. Like, I think he's just kind of drunk.
I'd love to see a version of this from Elliot's perspective.
Yes.
He's going to go back to his friends. He's like, oh my God, you guys are
oh,
never
I just
gonna
met
believe
this dude.
What they're... So there's a lot of name dropping in this.
Holy macaroni, there is. So, you know what? Let's just skip right to that.
H.P. Lovecraft's The Unnameable.
Oh, this is that's a common thing for him.
Constantly. It is.
Oh, constant. I did not realize that, because I was thinking, wow, that's really brilliant that he's got a guy who's been drinking and getting progressively drunker, because that is what people do when they're drunk, is they name drop shit. You know, they talk about, they're like, oh, this guy and that guy. So I thought, yeah.
Oh, well, first off, I love this interpretation, that it is just like comes to the character that he's name dropping. B, Lovecraft name drops a ton. And so there's tons of names and references in his stories that like take a little research to get into, which I'm telling you, Claire, I have lived with Lovecraft for 30 years. I've never looked up these painters or what, you know, I just scanned over the line, right?
I know Goya. That's it.
Yeah. And so the line is, I don't have to tell you why if a fusilli really brings a shiver, while a cheap ghost story frontispiece merely makes us laugh. There's something those fellows catch beyond life that they're able to make us catch for a second. Doré had it. Seam had it. Holy fuck.
Angarola
of Chicago has it. And Pikmin had it as no man ever had it before, or I hope to heaven ever will again. And so like, so there's a bunch in here, right? There's Fusilli, there's Doré, there's Syme, and there's Angarola. Angarola.
I just Googled him, and he is either Anthony Angarola, American painter, printmaker, and art constructor, or Michael Angarola, top Cook County prosecutor.
Possibly, but no. So, okay, well, let's go back to front, right? Angarola, first off, he's the last name in that sentence. And he's the most contemporary. He was working when Lovecraft was writing, and Lovecraft himself was, and I did research on this part. Lovecraft himself was a fan of this guy. He like his stuff. I don't know how much it, I hope you're Googling around.
I'm totally doing.
And I hope the listener is Googling around. Look up Angarola. God dang it.
Wow. Angarola.
Angarola. Thank you. Angarola of Chicago. But basically, he's kind of a proto, like his style is kind of a pre-Edward Gorey style. It's very pen and ink. He is probably most famous for his illustrations of Kingdom of Evil. You want to look that up and bask in it. It's good. It's no Edward Gorey, but it's good. But the other guys are Sidney Syme, who is an illustrator of Lord Dunsany's work. And at this point in his career, Lovecraft is very familiar with Lord Dunsany. Lord Dunsany did a lot of like kind of dark fantasy stuff.
Whoa. Monster brains.
Mm-hmm. Very similar to Monster Factory. So if you scroll down here, this is
oh,
Syme.
This is great. Okay.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, I'm looking at, I'm seeing almost like Dr. Seuss.
There's like some Dr. Seuss elements, except like if Dr. Seuss was born evil. Gustave Doré did a whole bunch of biblical scenes, which is, and so like he's known for basically having like a real good eye for like people's faces. Like he's really good at faces. And anatomy and things like that. And Lovecraft in the Body of Thurber goes into like how Pickman is super good at physiology. But Fuseli is the guy. If you want to talk about like post-Renaissance, you know, kind of industrial era art, Fuseli is the man. He executed the painting of Nightmare, which is in fact the icon art for this podcast. It's been the art like of a bunch of pulp, you know, sci-fi fantasy stuff. Titania and Bottom is another super famous one of his. And I really hope like during this time, I'm not going to edit out too much of this because I do want to have time for the listener to go Google around on this, assuming they're not driving or something. But yeah, look up these artists because once you look at these, then you get like a really good sense of like, well, what was Pickman stuff looking like? Which brings me to Goya. Goya is legit famous, right? Like he's one of the old masters. He's often called the last of the old masters. So Goya has a painting, which is the first of the series of called the Black Paintings, which is about the most Lovecraftian thing I've ever heard in my life. I've pasted it over to you, Claire.
Right. Take a look. Saturn devouring his son. I know that one.
So Saturn devouring his son.
That's pretty much described.
Exactly right. As, so there's a passage in there. Yeah. And it held in his bony claws a thing that had been a man gnawing at the head as a child nibbles at a stick of candy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pickman 100% ripped off Goya.
God, Pickman.
Anyway, I really like the name dropping of all the artists and really paying attention to it forced me to go look them up. And that brings us to a segment I like to call the Lovecraft Travel Agency. I have spent my entire life wanting to visit every spot ever mentioned in Lovecraft. I have actually been to a place mentioned in the story, and that is Copp's Hill Burial Ground. And if you care at all about either Lovecraft or just like Salem witch history, like you need to go to Copp's Hill Burial Ground. It is, it's in the North End. It's mentioned in the story as a place where, you know, the ghouls are like eating bones or whatever. And I like that, you know, that it's just like tossed off that way. It's like, oh, and also Copp's Hill. It's super cool. And so the Freedom Trail actually will take you through, you know, the North End as described by Thurber as he goes on his adventure with Pickman. And in fact, the description of old-timey North End completely comports with my experience of the North End in Boston. So I go to Boston 3 to 4 times a year. But finding literally anything in North End all the way down to Financial District is nearly impossible. And I feel like this story captures that impossibility pretty well, where like he is like dodging through streets and he's going down alleys and he doesn't know where he is. And that persists to this day. I don't know how people in Boston get around because GPS is apparently also broken everywhere from Constitution Wharf through the Financial District. It just doesn't work, probably on account of all the cannibalism and the hidden tunnels underneath. That has to be my guess at this point.
That's got to cause some really weird GPS bouncing.
Yeah. The other place to go to, mentioned in the story, is Gallows Hill. Gallows Hill is mentioned twice, once by Pickman in his kind of humble brag about being descended from Salem witches, like his great-great-great-great-grandmother was a witch. And then once in a painting that shoo the ghouls being at the feet of a hanged witch. But when you go to Gallows Hill, you ignore it because it turns out there is new research that Gallows Hill is not Gallows Hill. Are you ready for this bomb drop, Claire?
I'm ready. I mean, okay, go. I am not as shook. I am not as shooketh as you are by this.
I am shaken to my very core, Elliot. That Gallows Hill is not Gallows Hill.
No, I just have a headline that says The site where Salem's witches were executed is now next to a Walgreens. It's like the Alamo.
Mm-hmm. All right, yes, Gallows Hill isn't Gallows Hill. Now, this is breaking news. And in Lovecraft scholarly standards, breaking news is this was news in 2016. So only a mere 4 years ago, we learned that the place of the Salem witch trials, like probably the most famous, eerie, ghoulish kind of part of American history, like ghosty thing, wasn't where everyone thinks it was. It was, in fact, on a much smaller hill called Proctor's Ledge, which is between Proctor Street and Pope Street. But it's a smaller hill, which is important because Gallows Hill, turns out, was probably too steep for the carts of witches to go up it, which is like the main strike against Gallows Hill and has been since like the 19th century. When people are trying to figure out, like, well, where did those Salem witch trials actually happen? Proctor's Ledge is a ledge, not a hill, and it was like much easier to get up to. There were some eyewitness accounts that comported with the geography of Proctor's Ledge, but anyway, I encourage anyone who is interested in this podcast to go look up the history of Proctor's Ledge v. Gallows Hill.
So, what is going on? What's at Gallows Hill right now?
So Gallows Hill is a giant tourist trap for goths. No telling lies. Yeah, so that's it for the for Lovecraft Travel Agency. Gallows Hill and Copp's Hill. Two hills and a ledge to go to, Proctor's Ledge. You should check them all out. And that's... And this podcast is not sponsored by the cities of Salem or Boston, but you should go there anyway when we're allowed to go anywhere ever again.
We will accept those sponsorships, though.
And I would like to maybe introduce just maybe some table stakes here for this podcast. Something that is a little hard for some people to, you know, talk about, myself included, and listen to, and that is the segment I like to call Everyone Loves Racism.
Right. No, nobody loves racism.
It's hard for me to talk about because I've been struggling with this for years, and I'm hoping that this podcast gives me like something of an outlet to talk about Lovecraft's racism because it was for real. In a time of racists, Lovecraft was a racist, like to the point of writing poems about his racism, and it sucks, right? Like, I do feel like it's still okay to like Lovecraft's work, while, you know, keeping the whole racism thing at an arm's length. And I don't want this pot. What I don't want to do is like go looking for racism in all of his stories, you know, especially if it's not there. Like, that's actually kind of a thing that's happening right now in the lit crit of Lovecraft. What do you think, Claire? Like, I feel like I've been talking about this racism for way longer than I want to talk about. And I could use a lifeline.
Yeah, no, he's definitely racist. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, I guess I'm one of those people that thinks, not that you can separate the work from the racist, but you can still appreciate the work of a racist. I mean, we appreciate the works of terrible people all the time. So, but I
like Hitler, for example,
right? I mean, he was a painter, right? Did he fail out of art school or something?
He did.
And of course, it's easy for you and me as white people to sit here and say that, you know, you can still appreciate the work of a racist. But, you know, it's like, yeah, OK, we acknowledge that, like, he's super sucked for that. And I don't think we even have to accept, like, even though, I mean, even if he was only a product of his time, which we've determined he's more than that.
He is more than that, especially being in New England and
we can still now we can still view it through today's eyes and say, dude was a giant racist, because there were plenty of people during that time that were not. So exactly. He doesn't get a pass.
And people in Lovecraft's social circles, yeah. You know, yeah. It's like, these are people that he knew, and like he made that. And here's the thing. Here's the thing that that kind of solidifies the racism for me. Okay. First off, let me just like talk about the story, right? So in Pickman's model, I worry that all of the talk about the changelings and, you know, you have these ghouls, you have ghoul babies that are being raised by somebody else, like this to me like feels a little bit like, oh, I'm losing my cultural identity to immigrants. Like that feels like it's kind of a code for that. You know, and that I never really thought of it before until I was aware of Lovecraft's racism, right? And also the charges of cannibalism. Like this is super common,
right?
When you're talking about like anti-Semitism and xenophobia, it's like, oh, and also they eat babies. You know, it's like, well, yeah, obviously they eat babies. You know, that makes them horrible. Like this is a through line to like basically all xenophobia. And so like these elements in the story make me cringe a little, but not too much, because I still like the horror part of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I mean, I absolutely believe that, in the same way that I believe the U.S. Constitution is a living document, if you just read his stuff for, you know, what it is now, it's super freaky and fun.
It is fun. It is fun. And I think it's okay to, I think it's your duty as a Lovecraft fan to like figure out how to comport the racism with everything else. Right.
Right.
So, yeah. So I think it's on you as a fan to like accept that and deal with that in however way you need to deal with it.
I don't think it takes away from the fun of his work, but anything should be started, you know, every discussion of it should be started with, oh, by the way, yes, this guy was a racist.
Yeah, asterisks. You know, just like, I don't know, I hear that there are asterisks in baseball, right? Like, of most home right. runs. But it doesn't mean that, like, baseball is ruined, right?
No, it's true. Yeah. But again, it's us white people. I mean, the ultimate...
I am very excited to have some black people and other people of color on this show to talk about Lovecraft's racism. That is my goal. Yeah. That is my stated goal.
I mean, ultimately, you and I are not in the position of deciding when we have sufficiently addressed the issue of Lovecraft racism.
Yeah.
But all we can do, you and I can do as white people, is acknowledge it and then say, I'm sorry.
Sure. And I think we... And I do think we can go like story by story and say like, oh, and by the way, this is probably racist.
I think it's interesting to put it out. It's fun.
Yes, I do think it's interesting. And I do think that it's worthwhile. And it's something that like a 16-year-old might not notice that a 46-year-old would, you know? And so, you know, to our teen listeners, keep an eye out for that racism.
Yeah. I mean, if you can get yourself away from TikTok long enough to read a story.
To like read anything, really. And I'm speaking directly to my own 16-year-old right now. This is a narrowcast.
Oh no. I had an actual conversation with the 9-year-old, told me that rather than read a story, he would rather read the ingredients on a shampoo bottle that was sitting on the coffee table.
Of course he would.
He was like, I'll just read these ingredients. And I was like, wait.
I'm just using my eyeballs now. That's what you want, right, Mom? That's great. And you know what? And that's a good – thank you for bringing that to the podcast, because I feel like we're in Bummer Town and we're back in Funville. Now let's crawl like we are crawling out of a grave on Cops Hill burial ground. Let's crawl out of this racism corner and let's get back into unpopular culture.
Oh, that's right. Let's do it.
Have you never heard this name before?
I'm sorry. I pronounce it Trisha. What about you?
I pronounce it Trisha. That's what my mom said.
All right. The reason why I wanted to start with Pickman's Model, I have two reasons. A, fantastic intro to Lovecraft. If you know nothing about Lovecraft and you read the story, like, oh, this Lovecraft dude is pretty hip, right? Like, oh, ghouls and eating bodies and changelings and shit. And, oh, also, like, yeah, you know, name dropping a bunch of, like, cool-ass artists. Cool.
Who isn't into that?
It's got mass appeal. Second, Arkham Horror, the living card game,
yeah,
is taking all of my money.
We're getting it.
All of both of our money. We are giving it freely of our own free will because, we picked up, so we like board games, and we like Lovecraft board games in particular. We've been playing Eldritch Horror for how long have we been playing that? 3 years?
At least.
Something like that. 4 years?
Yeah.
5 years? And we picked up Arkham Horror, the living card game from Fantasy Flight Games. You should totally pick it up. They're not a sponsor. But the first adventure is basically you and your friend are in your study in your house and, oh shit, there's ghouls everywhere. And these are like the Pikmin ghouls. These are ghouls that live underground and they're going to come eat you and they're like super into cannibalism and all that stuff. And it took us a while. I would say it took us 4 playthroughs to like understand why this is fun.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
But like once it clicked for us, it's like, oh, we finally get these like weirdo rules that are written for lawyers. And also, I'm lucky I have a lawyer to play board games with. You should totally play this game with a lawyer because you need it. However, a lot of people found this fun, and we're in the depths of COVID-19 like lockdown, and we dedicated a Saturday to finding out why other people found this fun.
Right, yeah, because we had it.
We played it a couple times before then, and it was like, oh, this is kind of lame, and this is like real rulesy and not interesting in the slightest.
Yeah.
But then something, what was the magic? Do you remember the magic? Because I remember the day for sure. But what happened where we're like, we figured out like, oh, this is some shit we can get into.
I don't know. I mean, for me, I feel like it was really realizing that it was, I didn't have a concept of what a deck building game was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once I realized that,
that was a crucial step, right? Like, and that's I think some place where Arkham Horror kind of falls apart on that intro set, where it's like deck building happens, but you don't have to worry about that now. Yeah, and so consider this a recommendation and warning: if you get into this game, you are opting in to the speculative market that is the Arkham Horror expansion universe. It's bonkers. And I'm speaking from the point of view of someone who did not invent Bitcoin, that this is bonkers.
I don't understand. Do you make enough money in buying unopened games and then reselling them to make it worthwhile?
This has my whole Redbox selling career written all over it. Like, I could sell enough Redboxes to buy more interesting electronics than Redboxes. For sure. For sure.
Okay, so it's not to get rich.
And that's a deep hacker cut, by the way. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not to get rich. It's to maintain.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, basically, anytime I buy a new... And there are, like, 7 zillion expansions of this... They've only been publishing them since 2017. So, like, this is not ground floor stuff. This is like, oh, I learned about Bitcoin in 2012. Like, that's about where the level you're at. Or I learned about Magic the Gathering in, like, 1997. You know, something like that, right? Like, you can... I don't want this podcast to be responsible for people blowing their entire life savings on Arkham Horror card game expansions.
I do.
I do want that, actually. I want that. I want to go to court over this because I have the best lawyer in the world and I'm married to her.
That's so sweet. It's very untrue.
It is untrue.
Yeah. I mean, no, like if you were to get criminally prosecuted,
best looking anyway,
probably also untrue, but I'll take it.
Well,
now you've been back to the corner.
Damn it.
All right.
Damn it, your argument skills. Okay, so we should wrap up this podcast or not. Like, yeah. Do you have anything else to say? Because we can cut it right in before I wrap it up.
Okay. I just, as to the story itself, I think, like, okay, so the first time I was like, oh, this is cliche. And then I realized it's probably not cliche. It's what, you know... I mean the things that followed it were kind of cliche.
The story,
really, it's the ending. I mean, it's the dun dun dun,
the dun dun dun, right? Yeah,
yeah. But I don't think but at the time this was probably
I
very surprised. I mean, you could
in 1927 well, is it surprising though? Like, he really says expectations. And this is another thing about Lovecraft and his titles, is that like he kind of gives it away in the title. Like,
I don't
a lot.
I didn't get it from the title, but he does repeatedly say, I was pretty sure it was just supposed to be a model of the background. So what is happening there? Okay, so no, but I do want to talk about. So this guy, so Pickman is renting a house with a well where ghouls will come up and eat things and just sit there and eat things while he photographs them.
Oh, did I not mention? Oh, no, I didn't. It turns out Pickman himself is a ghoul changeling.
Okay. Okay, well, that makes sense.
This is,
because he was saying...
this is not in the text.
Well, it is.
It is heavy-handedly reverenced.
It is very much implied.
But it's not... Yeah. There is no textual proof of, like, and then it turned out Pickman was a changeling. Like, that's not in there.
Oh, but you can certainly guess it. I mean, he had the picture, you know, there's the painting of the changeling, and then the painting of the not change, you know. But regardless, it's like what self-respecting ghoul is just going to sit there and like pose pretty for the, like, I mean, I guess if you're relative.
As someone who has played the game, the Arkham Horror game, where you're beset by ghouls.
Oh God, if you're in the same location, they're going to attack you.
Yeah, they will immediately engage. But that's the thing. It's like Pickman is absolutely a ghoul changeling. Dr. Reed, one of the recurring characters in the retelling from Thurber, he says, he talks about like, oh, Pickman's not looking good. It's probably something he's eating. Dot, dot, dot. It's probably cannibalism. Like, that's not in the text, but that's the subtext. It's like,
yeah.
Pickman has already started eating people. Later on, Pickman shows up in a later Lovecraft story called The Dream Quest of an Unknown Kadath.
Oh.
And he is straight up in the Dreamlands, and he is a ghoul. And he's named as a ghoul. So, like, he has completed a transformation or something. And also, it's the Dreamlands, so, like, things are, like, more ghoulish and creepy than they would be in the real world. Presumably, after Thurber tells Elliot the story, you know, some amount of time after Pickman's disappearance, he disappeared into the Dreamlands to be a full-time ghoul. So,
very interesting.
FYI.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I had a great time talking to you, Claire, about this, to explore Pickman's model, to explore Lovecraft's life. And I think we're at the end. I think we're at the end of the podcast.
I agree. And also, if you are a writer, I would love to read your version, like I said, I would love to read Elliot's version of this whole conversation.
All right. Well, next week, we'll be I'll be back to read a story. I'm not super sure which one I'm going to read next. Basically, I'm going off of a list of, you know, I wanted to open with Pikmin's model because we played Arkham Horror. I want to keep them kind of short. So Pikmin's model is about 5,000 words, and that seemed to clock it right at about half an hour, which seems right. So I'm going to do another short one. I am up in the air about either the Cats of Ulthar, which I like a lot and has like a special meaning to me. Beyond the Wall of Sleep is kind of interesting. That's also like a super, super early Lovecraft. Or The Statement of Randolph Carter, which is arguably like the first true like mythos story where like there is like a Lovecraft cinematic universe all tied together through Randolph Carter. So it's going to be one of those. But I hope you tune in next week. And have a great night. I assume
Pod Sothoth is produced, edited, and hosted by Todd Beardsley. You can follow the show on Twitter at Pod Sothoth, spelled just like it sounds without hyphens. You can also email the show at podsothoth@gmail.com with any questions, comments, insights, and insults. Such missives may be read on the show, so please be sure to include any pronunciation advice for your first name or alias. Thanks for listening. The next episode will be a reading of The Statement of Randolph Carter by H.P. Lovecraft.